Hi guys, welcome back to your weekly Stoke City podcast, Every Step Along the Way. So as always, we're going to look back at the loss versus Cardiff, and we're going to be discussing the upcoming game versus Millwall. And of course, we're going to look at all the key news from around the club this week, including FFP and also a potential new player on the horizon. Okay, and a little bit different this week. Andy isn't with us tonight, or at least he isn't in person. He is in spirit, of course, and he's got some audio he sent in with his after-game thoughts for Cardiff. But before we kind of get into all that, I welcome back the one and only Daniel, fresh from the hospital with a little one in tow, mate.
Yes, indeed. She has arrived. So, yes, the family is complete once more. if I'm struggling, I'll just put any of the last 10 Stoke games on, and no doubt I'll be straight away.
And have we decided on the name? Have we gone for Michaela, Andy? Is that what we're going for? Or
no, unfortunately not. The missus has pulled rank, and she's gone for a Willow Nancy.
Willow Nancy. I love Willow. That's really nice, mate. Well, congratulations. I know it was about a week earlier than planned as well. So,
as they all have been.
Yeah, absolutely, mate. But no, brilliant. And it's a shame we've got nice news like that and we have to start talking about the shower that is Stoke City. So, we've just come back. Obviously, the time of recording this is, 4 minutes past 10 on Wednesday night. We've just seen Stoke lose to Cardiff. So, Dan, I'll come obviously to the only man here. So, what was your thoughts, mate? I mean, it was a pretty dire game, wasn't it, really?
Yeah, we seem to have plenty of, as per usual, we seem to have plenty of the ball and we have plenty of territory and we get forward and we get into positions out wide and whatever, and then we don't know what to do. Is pretty much the case. Week in, week out, it seems that, once we get around the penalty box, it all falls apart.
Yeah, I said earlier on, I mean, we don't really have an identity at the minute. I think, I don't know what identity is. I mean, we went, start of the season, and I know we can harp on about, injuries, and obviously they're a factor, but, we seem to be a ball playing, team. I go back to the goal against Cardiff, against the game against Forest. Obviously we had a really amazing game. We beat West Brom. We go into almost, like the Christmas period, thinking that this is a pretty decent team. We're not perfect by a long chalk, but we're looking pretty good. And I watch us, especially in the last few months, and I'm like, are we a long ball team? Are we a team that tries to play with wing backs? Are we a team that is 4-3-3? I don't know, if I'm honest. I don't know what we are. It's a really, really tricky thing to kind of pull on. And, I mean, O'Neill, again, he's obviously coming in for a lot of stick, as are definitely the owners. I mean, we've only just finished and we're getting tweets off God knows who, mate. Just, blaming the owners and blaming O'Neill and all that. And obviously everyone's very, very welcome to their opinion. Of course they are. I think the only shining light to really come out of things since January for me is Baker, who again scores a cracking goal tonight. And I must admit, mate, doesn't it make you wonder where we would be if Baker hadn't have got on this little run of form? Is that 7 goals since January now, I think? I genuinely don't know where we would be, but we wouldn't be scoring goals, I can tell you that. Mazur hasn't settled in, but I think that's because, again, we don't know how to play to the guy. We just don't look like we know what we're doing, do we?
No, we don't. Pretty much, if it was somebody took quite well there, we don't know what we're doing. And we seem to have, at the start of the season, we had a pretty clear mentality, a pretty clear way of playing, get the ball down, play it out from the back, take it under pressure, be confident on the ball, and play, and play through the lines, play it on the deck, and wait for the gaps to appear and then move it quickly when they do. Since I'd say October time, when we got struck by a lot of injuries, but since that's come, we don't know what we're doing. There's no patience in defence. There's no confidence in defence. I can't believe that Harry Suter not being there would affect everybody and their own game so badly. Do you know what I mean? I understand that, yeah, we're going to miss him and all that, and we aren't going to be as good a team without him than we would be with him. But I really can't see how everyone else's game has gone to pot so much. It can't be down to just that. There's got to be other factors. No. And probably losing games and going from winning positions. There's obviously a mentality issue because of, you know, we start games and we get in the lead and we just, like I say, we just can't hold on to it, can we? It certainly wouldn't be trusted with any of my dogs, put it that way.
And I think, see, the thing for me as well, mate, Howard Ballis, who came in and we thought, you know, God, this guy's looking good. He can pass from the back. His defending's been on point. And for me, I think he's been dreadful this last month. Absolutely dreadful. Obviously, he gave away the second goal tonight with just a stupid pass, to be honest. It's almost James Chester-like. You know, I said to you at the time, mate, I said, oh, well, that must be James Chester. And obviously, the replay came in, and it wasn't. It was bloody Ballis. But I don't know about you, mate, but I'm starting to question how good he is now. Did he just have that new player bounce, and we're seeing the real player now? I know he's a young lad still, so I do get that he's going to make mistakes. But for me, he seems to not be able to defend, not be able to pass. I'm kind of losing confidence in him a little bit now. And yeah, maybe this constant switching and changing of different players isn't helping. And tonight, you know, he's brought Wilmot back in. Chester somehow makes the flipping team again. Fox, who was dreadful, he's come back in. Sawyer's, again, obviously, he's kind of there. Campbell's come back in for starting again. Once again, I mean, how many changes is that? Is that four or five changes?
It was four tonight, yeah.
Four tonight. We can't keep doing this every game. No wonder we're not getting any continuity, because we can't believe to put the same team out. I don't get it, mate. O'Neill, like I said last week, O'Neill is not doing himself any favours whatsoever. We've got young lads, you know, we've got obviously Wright Phillips, we've got Forrester, we've got Bursic. If he's talking about, if we're looking at like players for next season, Joe Bursic's got to be starting ahead of Bonham. You know, Forrester, let's see how good he is. Start him instead of Chester. Fans would have probably forgiven him for the Harwood Ballis mistake tonight, Forrester. He's got a lot of points in the bank, you know, already stored up. Wright Phillips came in, did great, like we said last week, and got dropped very, very quickly. So, I don't know. Again, I don't think he knows his best team. I don't think he knows his best formation. And I'm just wondering at what point this went off the rails a little bit. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I think with the Bonham one, I'm wondering whether he sees Bursic as his number one, and he's got to put a squad together for next season, hasn't he? So, is he looking at Bonham and thinking, are you good enough? If Joe Bursic gets injured next season and I've got to play Jack Bonham, am I confident that he is a capable number two? If he has to play 10 games, 15 games due to injury, am I going to be happy if, you know, and Joe Bursic's not playing, go, don't worry, we've got Jack Bonham. Because if he isn't, then he's going to need to get another goalkeeper in, isn't he? I'm wondering whether that's why he's been playing him. Similar to how Fletcher played at the weekend. Is he thinking, you know, I'll probably need a centre forward. Do I give Stephen Fletcher another year? He hasn't really done much for me, you know, these last few months. Give him a game at the weekend. Go out and show me what you've still got, you know, that you deserve a new contract.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, he didn't really do much, so that's probably made the manager's mind up for him. Yeah, I imagine there's a lot of players. I'd say Klukas is probably one of them, because Klukas is playing for the under-23s at the minute and not getting a minute, you know, not even getting on the bench for the first team. So you'd imagine his days at Stoke are numbered, probably due to the fact he's probably still on a decent wage, you'd imagine, as well. So, yeah, it could be... that could well be... Like I say, he's out of the door in the summer. And he's made his mind up on that. And I think that's where it's going to go, because obviously, you know, we'll touch on the finances later on in the pod, won't we? But I think what's fair, what's pretty obvious still is, you know, that there's still got to be a lot of balancing of the books next season.
So are we going to have another season then of rebuilding it? Because, again, fans won't accept that. That's what this season's effectively turned into. A season of trying to rebuild, getting rid of all the deadwood, which, you know, in fairness, we've done that pretty much. Some people would argue we've still got a hell of a lot in that first team. But, you know, what did we say last week? 16 players we'll have when everyone goes back and if contracts all expired. How many teams go and sign 11, 12 players in one window and go on to do great things? Very, very few.
I don't know, because it's strange. I'd have to have a look at the numbers for other clubs, but I remember when we were, you know, I remember when we were a Championship side, you know, talking 15, 20 years ago, and every summer we'd end up bringing in, you know, double digits amount of players, and then they'd be on 1 or 2 year contracts, and then because you'd be hoping to get a gem that you could either sell on, or either you'd outgrow the player or the player would outgrow you. And you know, and I seem to remember a lot of players coming and going all the time. And whether that was just the way that, I think obviously Tony Pulis was the manager at the time, wasn't he? And whether that was the way he was operating, you know, this player comes in, gives him 12 months. No, you're not quite, you know, what I'm looking for. Bring somebody else in for 12 months, 2 years, and go again. I don't know whether that was just how we were acting, or whether that was how football was 20 years ago compared to now. I'd have to have a look and see, you know, on clubs' recruitments over the summer and maybe last couple of years. I was going to say, the higher up you go, like obviously top end of the Championship, Premier League and whatever, you do seem to hold on to your assets more because you get longer contracts, they're more valuable. So you do see less turnover of players, definitely, the higher up you go, I'd say. But for a Championship club, I think maybe 10, 12 players might be pretty standard, maybe.
Okay, maybe it is. And one thing I think we're going to have to bring up, mate, because, I mean, our Twitter feed's going bloody nuts at the minute. So in terms of... and it's going nuts.
Did you dare
with...
to back the Coates family the other day?
I know, yeah, it was a stupid tweet, wasn't it? mate, I've got no problem with anyone disagreeing. My comment was the fact that, you know, are they perfect? Not by a long bloody way, but no owners, I don't think, really are. So my comment on that front was, well, I don't really see any other owners with multi-million pound bank accounts willing to splash loads of money at the club, take on debt with pretty much no return. I don't see them queuing around the block with then the Stoke's best interests at heart. Whether we agree with what they do or not is irrelevant for me. It's, has somebody else got loads of money, and have they got just Stoke City's benefit at heart, not about making money? And until somebody like that comes forward, it's a non-starter for me. You know, what would happen if they disappeared tomorrow? They turn around on Monday, we're putting the club up for sale, we're not investing any more money in the club, it has to be self-sustainable. Everyone would be complaining because we're signing no players and we're probably fighting relegation the next season. Not that we're far away from that now anyway, but still, if that happened, that was my point. So I'm going to ask you, mate, are the owners at fault for this?
Oh, that's a tough question. I fully understand and fully want them sort of in charge of this club. Let's put that out there straight away. Are they at fault? Right, okay. So when Tony Pulis was in charge, when 2006, the coach finally took over, they brought Pulis back, and he knew he had a secure job. We went on a bad run, he knew it didn't matter because he had the family weren't trigger happy. They weren't going to, you know, sack him after 4 or 5 defeats. They would give him time, they would understand that there's a long-term project involved in managing a football club, and you get bumps in the road, it's ups and there's peaks and troughs and all that, and they were lauded by a lot of people for that, weren't they? A lot of people praised and said, you know, Stoke, it's a great chairman, they put the money in there, they back the manager, they give them whatever they want, and also, you know, there's job security with it as well, they don't just go around firing them at the first sign of trouble. they actually made a really good decision when they parted company with Tony Pulis as well.
Yeah,
brought in Mark Hughes. There was a lot of criticism for Mark Hughes before he even took the job, before he even stepped foot in the building. Wasn't there? There was, you know, people driving around the stadium and that was all based on what had gone on at QPR and what a basket case club that turned out to be. Mark Hughes, you know, he did a great job for Stoke. And yes, he was held on too long. I think that's pretty clear now that there was 18 months of decline under Hughes. But at the same time, when there's been three ninth place finishes and then a cup semi-final, a board that has accepted that there are peaks and troughs at the first sign of that trouble is not going to sack the manager. So people can say, oh, he should have gone the summer before because we'd been crap for 6 months. Thought, well, yeah, but at the same time, we had reached the cup semi-final and been a penalty, you know, Marco van Ginkel hit a post in an extra time, and then we lost in a penalty shootout. And that was, you know, that's how close we were to a Wembley final. I don't think they were going to sack the manager at that point either, were they? Because that would have gone totally against how they've been running the club.
Yeah.
What he probably did do is he probably needed sacking about a couple of months by probably November time. And definitely, I'd say, start of December, they probably needed to pull the trigger on Hughes. They left it a few weeks too late. And that ultimately probably left that, yeah, meant we were relegated, I'd say. If they brought a new manager in early December, who could have analysed the squad for 2-3 weeks before the window opened and then gone to the board and said, I want this, this, this and this, then we probably would have had more of a chance. As it turned out, we ended up doing recruitment via Tony Scholes and the board, didn't we? Because we didn't have a manager in place when we signed like Moritz Bauer and Badou and Dye. But obviously, Lambert came in. He was just happy to just get in the job.
Yeah.
And, so that position from there, that was their fault. They should have acted quicker. They then appointed Gary Rowett in the summer. And everybody, I can't remember many people complaining at all. And people can look back, and I've heard people complaining, saying that we paid, oh, yeah, Ophobia wasn't a good deal, Ince wasn't a good deal. Klukas wasn't a good deal. Nobody complained about the time. I'd love to see these people who complain about them, and then yeah, I'd love to see them produce, you know, tweets, posts, whatever, to say, yeah, oh yeah, I didn't agree with that transfer at the time. Look, here's my comment the day he signed saying he'll be no good. Because everybody started that season inside the club and outside the club thinking that Stoke City would walk the championship in 2018-19. They did. Everybody thought. Yeah. And then the problem with Rowett was he turned on the fans, and they were he spent a lot of money, and they expected football that was akin to what they were experiencing under Mark Hughes. And they thought, we spent all this money, we've brought all these exciting championship players in, we're going to blow teams off the park. And Gary Rowett doesn't want to play that way, does he? He never has done. He's a good manager at getting the best out of limited footballers. Or, you know, he gets them organised. He gets teams organised, rigid defence and everything else. They don't concede many goals. And then he uses a bit of flair further up the pitch. Quite similar to somebody we were talking about earlier on in this conversation. And there's nothing wrong with that at championship level. If you don't concede goals, you're not going to lose games. But the problem was he couldn't get us to create enough going forward either, could he? So we didn't score many goals. We had too many draws. And that led then, obviously, to clashing with the fans. He turned on the fans over Bojan, didn't he? And that was it then. That was it for him because the fans turned on him. Like I said, there's no coming back from that situation. Again, he then appointed Nathan Jones. And everybody's saying, what a breath of fresh air this is. There's a young, exciting manager. He's done really well. You know, we've got a manager who can new ideas, modern football and all that, and it just didn't work out. Again, nobody really was criticised at the time, were they? Nobody was saying, well, why haven't we got Sam Allardyce in charge or something like that? They were saying, no, look at this. This ticks all the boxes of exciting, you know, it's unknown and all that. It, you know, it's, you might say, modern. But it didn't work out. And he went, and Michael O'Neill came in. And I'll be honest, when Michael O'Neill came in, I thought, how the hell have we managed to get him? I thought he was a shoo-in for a Premier League job after what he'd done with Northern Ireland. And obviously the only reason he probably didn't get one is a lack of real club experience. And then, but what he has got is he did a lot of the day-to-day running when he was working in Scotland in club management and Ireland. And then when he was in charge at Northern Ireland, he also did a lot of the day-to-day, you know, the admin side of it. I'm not saying he sat behind a bloody computer, and but you know what I mean? Like, he took on a lot of roles to make sure he was fully in charge across the board. And that's the kind of manager they want. They don't want a head coach. They want a manager. But the thing is, when you have a manager, not a head coach, then you really have to back that manager. You can't have a manager in charge and then not go with what he wants. Obviously, the head coach position is a completely different one because you have like a director of football or somebody that that would oversee signing players and who comes in, etc. And the manager just gets them done to you, and he then works with them. They will have a say, or there'll be a shortlist drawn up and they'll pick off, oh, well, yeah, he's my number one target. Then if you can't get him, get him. Last resort, maybe him. Like, you know, that kind of thing. But obviously, Michael O'Neill's gone, you know, really in depth in his involvement in the club, and the board have backed him. Again, we've had a really rough time. There are extenuating circumstances. There's been a lot of bad luck, a lot of bad refereeing decisions, a lot of really bad injuries, serious long-term injuries for key players all at the same time. And it's just derailed everything. And then it's come back and we have looked disjointed. And we've looked disjointed, we've looked poor, we've looked inept a lot of the time.
Yeah.
But at the same time, we've only lost one game this season by more than one goal.
We're still losing games, though, regardless of how many goals.
Yeah.
And that's only because we don't really threaten at all at the other end most of the time. So it's easy just to lose by more than one goal because we're never scoring. They only need to score one goal to beat us, it feels like sometimes.
Yeah, but what I want to say, obviously, we've taken, is it now over? It must be over 30 points now with tonight's result. Over 30 points we've lost from winning possessions.
Yeah, 30.
And that's a mental thing. That's a mental block. There's something wrong with the mentality within the side. That's not an ability, because you wouldn't be in the winning possessions if it was an ability. Yeah, if the problem was they weren't good enough, they wouldn't be winning that many games. You know, in winning positions in that many games. The issue is either fitness, they can't hold out late on in games, or like I say, it's like a nervousness and a mental block that they can't finish off and hold on. They get nervous, they're making stupid mistakes.
I think it's a nervousness, mate, because we've had 45 minutes to turn that round tonight.
I think it's a mentality. I think that's the issue. There's a severe lack of confidence, would be my guess at the minute. At the start of the season, that was completely the other way. And they had a lot of confidence and it all clicked in. And they knew what they were doing and everyone knew their role. And they weren't changing. The thing is, well, yeah, they weren't chopping and changing like there is now. That's a major issue. There's four or five changes every single week. And that has to be labelled at the manager. That is fair. You know, that is fair game. He's got to pick at least 13 or 14 players and, you know, the most, and say, you know, you are going to be with me for the next few games. You can't keep changing, you know, five players every week. It's half your side. Yeah.
So I'm struggling to see the answer in terms of whether you think the owners are at fault. I like how you've dodged the question.
I sort of detoured off a bit, didn't I? I don't think they're at fault, because people say now that they are holding on to the manager too long, but at the same time, that is something that they have been praised for previously, that they don't panic. And I think just because other clubs seem to, you know, be trigger happy in that, I'd much rather them be Stoke City and be like how they are than be the other end of the scale and be somebody like Watford, where you have four managers a season just because you lose two in a row. I'd much prefer to be our end of the scale than that, put it that way. People are saying about look how much debt they've got, that's poor management now. Just go and have a look at championship losses for clubs across the board and just look from top to bottom. There are some scary numbers in there. And the thing is, at least the numbers that we are posting in there are numbers that we know that are secure, because the owners are paying them off and not asking for that money. There are clubs out there that are spending way beyond their means and don't have owners with deep pockets that are willing to pay them off. They have owners that are gambling their club's future on winning promotion within two seasons. That is mismanagement.
Before it went wrong.
That is mismanagement. Look at someone like Reading. Look at Reading and Swansea, both in the playoffs last year. Look where they both are this season. In hindsight, I think if we'd have kept Gary Rowett, if we could have took that mic off him when we played Bolton away, if we didn't have that post-match interview, I think someone had a word with him and said, I think you were maybe getting a bit agitated tonight. Yeah, don't have a go at the fans.
Yeah.
Then I think we probably would have even gone up that season. But I definitely think he would have got us, at least a playoff place between, the first couple of years.
Okay. All right, good. Well, I think we've done almost this one to death, to be honest with you. But I'm going to throw a few things out there and then we'll get Andy's thoughts. Because, as I said, the poor side's gone down to Cardiff tonight. And, mate, you're a glutton for punishment, I swear, because I would not dream of going to Cardiff to watch Stoke right now. So, fair dues to you, mate. But, I think it was Andy Spraggs just put a post up for the form for the last, it's done it twice. So the last kind of 14 games as well as the last six. So from the last 14 matches, we are third from bottom. So played 14, won 2, drawn 5, lost 7. We've scored 19, we conceded 21. So we've got 11 points from the last 14. And if that wasn't bad, if we take the last six alone, we are bottom of the form table. Even Peterborough are above us. So we've won six. Sorry, well, we wish. Played 6, won none, drawn 2, lost 4. We've conceded 10 goals, only scoring 6. So pretty dreadful. If Peterborough can go above us, there's something seriously wrong. So, again, pretty dreadful reading. But what we'll do, let's have a quick chat with Andy, see what he had to say, and then we'll move on to this week's news anyway.
All right, guys, so full-time reaction. Basically, I don't want him to go, but, mate, I'm like Mike, starting to lean towards the Michael O'Neill outside. It's getting harder to watch game on game, and to yet again throw away a 1-0 lead. You know, conceding 5 goals against one team in a league is abysmal. Obviously scored 4 against him, but, it's just getting depressing now. Don't want to put a bad mood on to all things seen. DiMaggio, right, Phillips back in the team. He did well since he came on. Vrancic did well when he came on. Maggio played a bit better today. Tymon, being a player he is, good, but Chester needs to get outside, mate. Chester needs to get outside a lot. I say it every day, but Chester needs to get out of that side, and it's upsetting. It's upsetting. Now I've got a 3.5-hour, 4-hour coach trip back home. Mate, what can you do? I think, Swansea have gone above us now, and definitely Cardiff. I think they've gone above us now. It's getting hard to watch, lads. And we're going to be known as a team who was fighting for relegation. Michael O'Neill was meant to really turn this around, and this season the ship has just gotten a lot rockier than normal. So, yeah, we lose every week. Cardiff are nothing special, are they, really?
Yeah, cheers, Andy. Much appreciated, mate. Hope you have a nice, safe travel back, only about 4 or 5 hours. So have fun, mate. I wish you could listen to this. It was live, and then we could take the pee out of you directly. But, yeah, I must admit, Dan, I find it quite amusing how after about 30, 40 seconds of that audio, Andy presses fast forward on himself. Is that one of those old radiograms, or, you know, where you put it on double speed by accident? You know, the old record players? I love that. I think he gets a bit emotional and then it goes really quick. So, yeah, Andy, you've got no comeback, mate, because this isn't live. So, yeah, tough. But, yeah, no, as I said, fair play, mate. You're going all that way. You deserve better. Everyone who went there today deserves better. Before we kind of go on to the news, Rory, a very regular listener, has sent in some audio for what she thought about after today's game.
Hello, thanks for having me. I don't quite know where to start, but I've heard that Chester was absolutely awful again. I think it's time that we get rid of Chester now. And even more, the Michael O'Neill comments are coming in, and I think now more than ever, we need to just back the boys and back O'Neill and whatever decisions he's making, even though some decisions are stupid. But I am purely waiting for the text message, the message that Michael O'Neill's gone. But it is a case of gone or stay. I think he'll stay till the end of the season. If he doesn't, then I won't be surprised. I think man of the match, it'd probably go to Lewis Baker because I saw the goal and the goal was gorgeous, to be fair. It was a nice scream and everyone was like, oh, well, he only scores tap-ins. Bye, guy. Lewis Baker doesn't fail with us and his tap-ins. But I just think Stoke need to up the game now and purely decide what they're doing and where they're going with this, because we're just going further and further down the table. We face Millwall on Saturday. Gutted I can't go because it's purely going to be a violent match with the fans. And I hope it isn't, but it's just one of them that it's going to be a risky game. But I'm predicting 2-1 for that game. So I can't wait to be involved in the Women's Involvement podcast. That'll be fun. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, thanks very much, Rory. Much appreciated, mate. So you're clearly a Michael O'Neill in type person still. So he's still got some supporters out there. I'll be honest with you, I'm still on the fence. I really am at the minute. But I think one thing that I think Rory echoes a lot of what we all thought, really. We just want some direction from the club. Like she says, either come out and back him or come out and sack him, one or the other. Yeah, they've got to give an indication of what the plan is and what they're going to do. And Dan, like you said to me earlier on, mate, if they're going to sack him, just get him gone now. Let us have some time to look at the team, you know, find somebody new and just have... Now is the time to do it. While we've got all these contracts out, now is the time. If they wait until, you know, let's say they don't come out and say anything, but they don't sack him, they give him, you know, 10 players in the summer, and then he doesn't start well and they sack him anyway. At that point, that manager's then, you know, basically left with players he probably doesn't even want. So which is, again, going to start the whole merry-go-round of how do we get rid of these people. So we need a decision either way, don't we, soon, to be fair, Dan?
Yeah, like I said to you, it makes no sense for them to sack him in the summer. Either they decide at this point, because the season's over, the season's over. So the results between now and the end of the season, to me, play secondary to the planning for next season. I would be more interested in playing a few of the younger lads, you know, between now and the end of the season, players who he's unsure about, and him using it to mould and prepare a squad for next season. But I'll tell you what I would do as well, because what happens is clubs tend to do it in the last three games of the season. By that point, most of the teams in the division are doing the same thing. So the intensity levels are down and all that, and you don't get the same sort of importance on a match and the same levels than that. You know, everything drops. The performance levels of every players around them drop because they're on the beach, aren't they? Half of them, during by that point.
So like they're on the bloody beach now, half of them.
Well, I was all, yeah. But it's like there's 9 games left. So Millwall on Saturday, Millwall's still, yeah, they're banging form. We've just seen there 14
top of the
points.
Form table.
Yeah, 14 points from 6 games. Only conceded once in that time. So what a great time to throw a couple of young lads in for me.
But anyway, yeah, so we've literally done that game to death now. Okie doke. So Stoke City news this week, there's not an awful lot of it, to be honest with you. There's a few things we want to run through, but... So let's start off with the first bit of news. And it's the, even though the window is very much closed, we've got George Wilkinson, who has actually joined Stoke on his second week of trial. So he's been doing really, really well in the National League this season. I think he's appeared 10 times for Dover Athletic. So we've taken him on loan. He's a bit of a kind of, you know, flexible midfielder. He seems to have spent a lot of time in the mids, centre mid. He seems to have spent a lot of time on the right side of midfield as well. And he's only 17. So again, there's a lot of development still to happen with him. It wouldn't surprise me if one of two things happen with this chap. So I think either he'll go into our under 18s and very quickly into the under 23 crop of players, or he'll probably go out on loan as well. So, again, we're still constantly trying to bang down that kind of, you know, under 18, under 23 pool of players, now bringing in some promising people from obviously even further down the pecking order. Do you know much about this guy at all, Dan? Or
No, nothing at all. Yes, my football knowledge doesn't quite dip into 17-year-old Dover Athletic midfielders, unfortunately. But
you should be ashamed of yourself.
But yeah, the fact he's been playing, like I say, National League level at that age is a positive. You know, first team football anywhere if it's 17, you know, would suggest that he's got a bit of promise. And yeah, Stoke will probably take him in, nurture him. I know they do similar things with like Will Goodwin, who they had from Chester, haven't they? And you know, they've had a couple of players like that. They like picking them up around this age. So yeah, it'd be interesting to see if he. If they offer him something more permanent.
Okay. Let's see what happens with him, mate. I mean, again, we know nothing about him, so just one to keep an eye on. I personally think they'll probably sign him and send him back out on loan to National League. I suppose that's quite possible. Maybe, I don't know, maybe he'll go back to Dover or something. But yeah, let's see what happens on that one. In more of an interesting perspective, we've got the FFP... /stadium sale /FFP dodge is probably the best way of really putting it. So obviously everyone knows really has been following Stoke in the last week. The owners brought the stadium last year. We didn't really know. I think there was rumours about it happening, but yeah, there was nothing at all certain. So to be precise, on May the 28th, 2001, Stoke brought the stadium. And obviously Bet365, shall we say, brought the stadium. Now, they paid $70.25 million for that stadium. And it cost $16 million quid to build, which was, if I'm not mistaken, Dan, it was kind of part funded by the council, if my memory serves me correctly.
It was indeed. It was a community stadium.
It was, yeah. So it was like, I think they paid a very good chunk towards it. I think it was at least 50%, if I remember rightly. But again, we're going back some years here.
Yeah, because they were the majority sort of owners, weren't they, for a long time? Mm. It was only when the Icelanders were brought out in the mid-2000s that we sort of then went and brought the stadium.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, I said that, I remember it quite well. Now, what was quite interesting about the whole sale piece, so it was just under it was going to be over a month until the new EFL rules came in, which obviously stopped clubs selling stadiums at a profit. Now, that, as we know, that's one hell of a bloody profit, from 16 million to 70 for a stadium that's, let's be honest, needs work doing to it. And there's a lot of upkeep that needs to be done on that stadium, and there needs to be new paint jobs. And obviously, you know, the club are investing in that over the next 4 or 5 years. So fair enough. But yeah, quite clearly, I think one thing, Dan, that this really showed to me is we've clearly looked at this early on last year and thought, we're going to be screwed on FFP unless we find a way around this. And obviously, you know, the Coates family and, of course, Tony Scholes, being the accountant that he is and whatnot, have found a way around it. And it makes me realise, if we hadn't have done this, how far away from FFP we probably were. It's pretty scary, really. But we've had to sell a stadium for 70 million quid to just about get over the line. Not doesn't make good reading, and obviously we can only do this once.
Yeah, well, we wouldn't be able to do it again, would we? If it was, regardless of whether we'd done it or not. So hopefully, you know, I mean, hopefully the optimum that I mean, Tony Scholes being the accountant that he is, I'm sure that he will have checked, double checked, triple checked all the rules and everything else around FFP to make sure we weren't liable for any sort of comeback on this, and he will have got the optimum price for that stadium.
I was going to say, who values the stadium? Surely somebody independent's got to value that stadium.
Yeah, you'd think so. I mean, I was saying to you earlier, you know, the land value in Stoke-on-Trent has gone skyrocketed lately, hasn't it? The Trenton Lakes is the place to be. Could make some nice houses on there if they knock it down, you know.
Well, those houses that they're building up the road, mate, have just gone up 50 grand, so I'm sorry for whoever's buying them. But yeah, I mean, obviously we're going to have Kieran Maguire back on to the show once the kind of official accounts are released by the club. We'll be having Kieran back on, and Kieran's going to run through what it all means, because I'm quite intrigued to see whether, a little bit like the three-year rolling, whether that's 70 million quid instant injection or whether that again is spread out over a three-year period. I would assume it probably is a three-year period, but again, we'll know more. So we'll wait for them to come out, and then obviously Kieran can do some commentary on what that actually means. But yeah, it's I don't think it was received very well by the wider football community, Dan. I remember some of the salty comments that we had. And you know what? If I'm a Derby fan, I kind of get it in a way, but obviously the Derby situation was slightly different. Their owner didn't publish his accounts, was very dodgy, so it's a different scenario. But I guess from a club's outside perspective, they just see this as a very easy way of dodging the rules.
Yeah, well, obviously, like I say, there's no way they would have done it had they not been 100% sure that it was within the rules, because they're not. Yeah, it's pointless, isn't it? You're only going to get yourself in more trouble by doing it like that. So what it does do as well is obviously that £70 million in income, I think basically it's probably bridging a parachute payment for another, like it's like the extra sort of Premier League money for another year, isn't it? Sort of.
Yeah.
So it's sort of bridging that gap. And the issue was we had a lot of players on long-term contracts from the Premier League because we thought that we were steady, stable Premier League club, and we got relegated and we got hit with, like I say, 4-5 year contracts for players. And then to build on that, we then went and signed a load more players for massive fees for this league.
Yep.
It's just added to the problem.
It has, mate. It has. And we're going to have to tighten those belts now. I mean, some people comment on Twitter about that. And yeah, you're spot on. We've got to tighten the belts. And we have been doing over the last couple of years. But the days of Stoke City signing players for probably even £1 million plus are probably over for the time being. I don't think we're going to see that. We're going to see a lot of freebies, a lot of loans. We're back to pretty much when the Coates family first came in. You know, they weren't splashing loads of money around. They got a lot of loan players. And I think we're going to have to go back to that type of a setup now potentially until we get promoted again. So we'll see how it pans out, mate. But either way, at least we don't have to worry too much about FFP in theory. Cool. So you've actually been on the hunt as well, mate. So Tom Ince, I noticed he scored at the weekend. We always like to have a bit of a catch up on some of the lone players, don't we? Old and young. Obviously, Tom Ince are into that old category. He's been around forever, but he's not young anymore. So it was the Allen Park Royals who got in touch with us around Tom Ince, just to give us a bit of an update on obviously how he's been getting on.
Evening. Just a quick couple of minutes on Tom Ince and how he's performed for Reading. So he's been here since pretty much the end of January now and played 10 games, I think it is now, for Reading. He's pretty much played every minute since he's been here. And I think he's been subbed off once in the 89th minute in a home win against Birmingham. Overall, it's not been a bad signing. I think it's kind of a signing which gave Reading a little bit more of an option on the right-hand side in terms of he's a bit more effective than potentially what we had. And although it's not necessarily resulting in that many assists or goals, I think he's got one assist so far, and he scored his first goal last night away at Bournemouth with a pretty decent edge of the box shot after a corner. He has worked hard. He does track back. He does put the effort in, which is kind of what Reading fans have been wanting to see out of the players now for months. So it's good to see that we've got someone like that who cares. The whole situation with his dad coming in to manage the club is another situation entirely. No one's really sure how that's worked. No one's really sure why it's happened. And it seems like there must be some kind of an involvement from Tom coming into the club for Paul Ince to be at Reading. Otherwise, there's just no way it would be happening. Unaware as to who Tom Ince's agent is, but strong leanings suggest it's probably Keir Jarabchen, because without it, I don't really think that Paul Ince gets a job at Reading. And my guess is that if that's the case, it wouldn't go down well with Reading fans if he was to become a permanent signing at Reading. Because there's so much meddling already going on within the club, as it is from Keir Jarabchen. But overall, Tom Ince, he hasn't exceeded expectations, but he's certainly not underperforming either. So relatively pleased overall, and you know, hopefully he'll kind of be an effective piece in terms of keeping us up this season.
Okay, yeah, thank you very much indeed for the overview. Sounds very much like Tom Ince, that. Not a bad signing, not been too impressive. Scores from the edge of the box, tracks back. That's pretty much it. That pretty much sounds like Tom Ince all over that, Dan, doesn't it?
Yes, we know that very well, don't we, that Tom Ince?
We do.
Yeah, I suppose playing for his father, he's always going to be putting in, and obviously playing for a contract and playing for his dad. So, yeah, he's got to make sure he's going to be picked up by somebody in the summer, hasn't he?
Yeah, he'll need a new contract. But I guess if Ince stays, then he's got one for as long as he pretty much wants one, I suppose. But, yeah, so, OK, interesting. So, Dan, let's go on to your favourite section, mate, which is the under-23s. What's the kind of news on that side of things this week?
Well, we've got a mixed bag, really, coming from the youth and women's football. So we've got the under-23s, that's a positive. They had a 1-0 home win over Middlesbrough this week. A goal from Douglas James Taylor, which again, you know, I was talking to you, aren't I? Yeah, yet again. 15 goals in 20 games at that level now. So he's starting really to be knocking on the door, surely, to be sort of included around the first team. For me, I mean, he went out to Wealdstone in January, played four games, one of which he only lasted 2 minutes and he was sent off. He didn't hit the back of the net, but since he's come back, he's doing regularly for Stoke. So he's obviously learnt a lot from that month out on loan at, you know, it's playing the first team football there and being involved there. So he's another one for me that I think, you know, 15 and 20 is a... He knows on the back of the net, as if nothing else. Surely, you know, give him a run out between now and the end of the season. If you play him and you feel he's not good enough, for now, send him out on loan. Or leave him in the 23s another year. But you never know. He might come in, he might score 2, 3, 4 goals between now and the end of the season, and you think, oh, hang on, next year we've got another option now. if we struggle next season for a goal or a particular type of striker, and he fits the mould, we more confidence in being able to bring him in, and he's got a bit of confidence to come in as well. Because like I say, them three and a bit games at Wealdstone seem to have done in the world of good. So imagine what, you know, 3-4 championship games will do for him between now and the end of the season as well.
So, yeah, I think it's as you say, mate, it's one of them. 15 and 20 games is impressive at any level. So he clearly, as you said, he needs either to step up or go out on loan to maybe a League One club. Really, let's test him and see how he can do. I wouldn't mind. Again, this is, for me, the perfect time where Neil should be bringing him in and giving him that opportunity. Let's just see. He could be the next Tyrese Campbell. He really could. And obviously the Tyrese before he got injured, of course, not the Tyrese Campbell we've got now, but still the Tyrese of the other season. So you've got to give the guy a chance. I'd love to see what Tyrese's record was, but I don't think it was 15 and 20.
Yeah, I mean, it's a shame, isn't it, that we haven't been able to hold on to any of these leads the last few weeks, because if we just get one or two wins, just to relieve the pressure off the manager and everything, I think he'd find it a lot easier to bring these lads in then. But at the minute, with the players being as down as they are, I think that might be what's just holding him back with pulling the trigger on that and getting him involved. It's like bringing them into that negative outset straight away.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I think it might be what saves him with the fans. Especially the fans on Saturday, for example. If there's a few young lads in the team, it might just hold back any sort of criticism that could be coming his way. You know, because they won't. If the fans go, we've got these, let's have a look at these young lads, let's get behind them. Maybe.
Hmm.
Tyrese got 13 and 17 before he made his Stoke debut, by the way, in the under-23s.
Okay, so pretty similar then.
Yeah. That was obviously, under-23s. This week they play Newcastle at home. They kick off at 7 p.m. And like this week against Middlesbrough, they're also at the Bet365 Stadium again. So, yeah, that's another thing. He's James Taylor as well. He's managed to get a goal at the Bet365. So, obviously, a game that I imagine would have added a little bit more pressure for the lads and everything. And they managed to win. We are, in fact, by the way, the Fulham have already won the league. Sound familiar, does it? In the under-23s. They've already won, like, the second tier of under-23 league. But we are fourth. So we are with the second to fifth going to playoffs, and we're fourth at the minute with a game in hand on the teams who are chasing us as well. So we're all set. I think there's six or seven games left, if I'm not mistaken, before the playoffs. So we are well set for a playoff to go up in that league as well. So that's all good.
At least one of the Stoke teams are.
Yeah, not so good for the under-18s though. They are struggling in the league. And they're also out of the League Cup now. And they've done really well, haven't they? Get to the semi-finals of the League Cup, beating Arsenal in the quarter-finals. The 5-1 defeat at home to Chelsea last week. So, yeah, Chelsea's mega academy. Soon to be disbanded, no doubt. And all sent elsewhere. Either that or promoted to the first team, one or the other. They beat us 5-1 last Saturday. And then this week it's back to league action. We've got Newcastle for the under-18s. We've got Newcastle as well. Wonder if they're coming down together. But yeah, they're coming down on Friday, 7 o'clock at Clayton Wood. So yeah, there's that. And then they also got the women. They lost 2-0 to Nottingham Forest last week. And as far as I can see, everywhere there's no game this week. But yes, obviously that's relying on the official Stoke side, which
don't rely on that, mate. I'm surprised they haven't still got us in the Premier League.
So that is relying on that. So apologies if there is a game. Someone can direct me to a more a more reliable source. I am willing to bookmark it and use it in the future.
Christ, mate. I think Christ going out any website that's not Stoke-related, you'll probably find it. So harsh, isn't it? Well, actually, no, it's not blinking harsh. And the coverage is pretty dire at times, actually. But anyway, that's probably a different discussion. But no, that sounds okay. They might at least be having some success somewhere in the club. And I mean, again, we'll kind of come on to something to do with the ladies shortly. But yeah, thank you for the overview, mate. Still relatively positive overall. That pretty much does it for this week's news. Let's go and, look ahead, if that's the right word, to Millwall this weekend. Okay, and as I said, really, whether the words look ahead to Millwall are the right words to particularly use, I'm not quite sure. But either way, we have to do it. So this is normally a section I'd normally look forward to in terms of Dan and Andy going at it, to be fair. And I do mean with stats, nothing else, before you rude people start interrupting. Anyway, Dan, you and Andy can't go at it this week. But what do you want to just give us a bit of an overview of? Any interesting stats you've managed to cobble together?
Yeah, so on the recent form, and we have sort of mentioned it earlier on, but if anyone didn't hear, Millwall are 8 unbeaten. They're top of the form table in the last 6 games with 14 points, and only conceded only once in them last 6 games as well. So they are on great form. Stoke 24th and bottom, but yeah, we'll move on from that. Millwall have actually won the last 2 meetings between the sides as well, and are unbeaten in the last 6, which, interestingly enough, is the time that Gary Rowett has been Millwall manager. The last win for Stoke was December 2018 when they won 1-0 at the Bet365 Stadium, a goal from Saido Berahino the difference. Ironically, that was Gary Rowett's last Stoke win as manager. Oh, it's funny. Yeah, it's weird, isn't it, how these things happen. So his last win as Stoke manager was against Millwall, December 2018. He got sacked a couple of weeks later. He's moved to Millwall, and we played him 6 times since, and we 3 wins, 3 draws for Rowett, and nothing for us.
Strange how ex-managers do that, isn't it? Like, Pulis did it. Just all
you would think, wouldn't you? You would think that the club, which has actually got the players on the pitch and may have 5, 6, 7 players, say, who might have a point to prove, they would be the ones out there rather than a manager standing in a dressing room full of players who weren't involved at the club and he's getting wound up and trying to fire him up. And they might be thinking, all right, Gaffer, all right, yeah. Playing Stoke, yeah, okay. Yeah, but it's a big game for me, this is, boys. All right, yeah. And it doesn't, you'd think the players would all, like, in that situation, the players at the previous club would hold more sway than the manager at his new club, wouldn't you? But there you go.
Yeah,
I think maybe that has happened with Jones and Luton until recently. It's all gone to pot. But yes, anyway, back to the stats there. What had happened, though, Stoke had won the previous 5 before that 1-0 win as well. So that 1-0 win actually made it 6 wins for Stoke in a row against Millwall before we've now actually gone 6 games without a win. At Stoke, though, Millwall's win last season was, in fact, their first in the Potteries in 19 years. And Stoke's record against Millwall at the Bet365 Stadium is played 11, won 7, drawn 2, lost 2. So not too bad, not too shabby.
Not shabby.
Recently not great, but history has not been a happy hunting ground for Millwall. And just a little point as well, they've only conceded 34 goals this season, which gives them the 3rd best defence in the league. And the best outside of the automatic promotion zone.
Yeah, it's amazing how they've just come out. I don't know. It feels like they've come out of nowhere and been marching up the league. I mean, clearly they haven't come out of nowhere. It's just one of them clubs that no one really cares about, I think. I think that's probably what it is, to be honest, Dan. But,
ouch.
Yeah, it's a bit harsh, isn't it, that? It does feel like they've come out of nowhere. The same with Luton, and I think obviously Luton have managed to do that for a while, but they've been very easily noticed just recently. But yeah, as you say, mate, I'm not quite sure which way this one's going to go personally. I know, obviously, in terms of we like to do score predictions and teams and stuff like that. I'm not even going to give you a team this week, mate. Firstly, because I've not even had a chance to make one. And then secondly, because, I don't know, he's going to make about 10 changes. So, you know, I genuinely haven't got a blinking clue who's going to play where. So I'm not going to give you a team this week. If you've got one, mate, go for it. Let me know. But I haven't got a team for you. I've got a 1-1 prediction for you. I think it's going to be close. Wouldn't surprise me to lose. It definitely wouldn't surprise me that we could lose that one, knowing our home form and obviously the fact we're playing the top versus bottom worth of actual form. But have you even had a chance to look at your team yet?
Yes, I sort of have, and I'll fire it away across to you now. I think, I want to see Joe Bursic back in goal.
Hoorah, yes.
I've made my mind up on Jack Bonham. He's made a couple of decent saves, but yeah, they're just we need a goalkeeper who is comfortable on the ball as well, don't we? Because he's obviously that is the way he's looking to play, and it's not working because they aren't comfortable and they are lumping it long. We're struggling at right back, to be honest, aren't we? Because Tommy Smith is injured, so I believe, and Ben Wilmot hasn't really covered himself in glory tonight.
No, but a few games now, isn't it?
Yeah, and then Dehaney's, I think he's had a couple of games, and to show the manager that, you know, he's had a couple of games where the manager's had a look at him. Can I trust him? Is he a viable option for me next season, or do I need somebody else? And the fact he's not been involved tonight would suggest that maybe the manager has made that decision either way. I would say Wilmot gets the nod for one more. If we still had Kieran Coates here, I'd be saying that he should be playing rough seas out on loan in Tiernan Island. So without him, I'd say Wilmot keeps the shirt for this week anyway. And hopefully Smith is back after the international break. And then, like I say, the three of them can decide which one of them stays and which two leave in the summer, hopefully.
Well, I was going to say, mate, to be fair, we could need a whole ruck of right-backs at this point, or right-wing-backs, whatever formation he decides to stick to this time. I don't know.
Yeah, to be fair, Wilmot's playing out of position out there, isn't he? He's just helping out, I think. Doing his bit of community service out on the right, helping him out. Get back to my team. Basic in goal. Wilmot playing four at the back. Wilmot on the right. I'm going to have to put Timon back at left back because I never want to see Morgan Fox put the shirt on again, to be honest. I know I was a bit of a supporter of his earlier on the season, especially in the back three, only because I think he was replacing James Chester and he's not quite them levels yet. But on the left side of the three, he was a better option than him. They just look nervous every time the ball comes near him. He looks nervous. There's just no composure on the ball at all. It's all just sort of very stabby. I'd stick Josh Timon back there. I think Josh.
Yeah.
Moved further forwards against Cardiff, didn't really get involved as much. I think it was something I'd like to have seen, something I think it's good that we give it a chance, but I think it showed as well that he prefers to come from deep. Where you further forward, you've got a lot more, it's a different game, isn't it? You're up against a fullback. There's a lot more attention on you there where you can sort of drift into games a bit further and playing in the position he has been, so...
Okay.
So, yeah, definitely, I'd say Timon back at left back. Do we know on Jagielka? Is he available the weekend?
Not heard anything on Jags, to be honest, mate.
Because the first centre back I'm playing is Will Forrester. Ideally, I'd like to have Phil Jagielka alongside him because I think that'd be the perfect thing for him, wouldn't it?
He can
be coached and taught through the game. I'm not sure. I don't really want to put him with James Chester. No disrespect to him. Although I feel like I'm disrespecting.
Yeah, no disrespect, but you're rubbish. So
Yeah. It's gonna have to be Taylor Arwood Bellis and go with the youthful centre halves. It's weird before. Yeah, we've played young centre halves together before. At the start of the season, we played Suter, Wilmot, Ostergaard, didn't we? And both of them, you know, all three of them were 21, 22. That seemed to be working all right for a time. So, that's what we're going with there. I'm going to stick, going to keep Alan in the midfield.
And yeah, you got to, I think.
Yeah, I think Alan and Baker are going to stay in the midfield, actually, as a two. I'm going to put Adam Porter in there with them.
Okay, is that in the like the Nick Powell type formation? Or?
Yeah, I think maybe as a three. Similar to what I was going to say, he's going to play as an actual three. But obviously then, I think all three of them have got the ability to get forward there as well, haven't they? So it's sort of, you know, take it in turns and stuff to, you know, to rotate it around to keep the opposition guessing as well and keep the fluidity going as long as they sort of, you know, get a understanding going between each other. And also as well, Sawyers, who I liked tonight. I thought Sawyers had a lot of, I said to you, didn't I, you know, his movement and his energy was quite good tonight against Cardiff. I think, yeah, obviously we don't want to be pushing him too much. There's not much we need to know about Romain Sawyers, to me, to be honest. I think the manager knows everything he does as well, doesn't he? I'm sure he's made his mind up whether he wants Romain Sawyers back at this club next season or not.
And who are you going up front with?
So, yeah, I've got to pick three up front there, haven't I? So I would give Brown the start up front.
Yeah.
I'd keep him up front, I think. We look a lot better when Jacob Brown's up there. He presses, he pushes, he causes problems for the defence. He gets the nod still. I would go again with Tyrese. I think Tyrese, I know we're talking about fitness for people like Sawyers and that, but I think Tyrese, to get into that rhythm and playing game after game, I think he would benefit from that now at this stage. He's been back long enough now. To really start pushing that the body of his and that maybe if I don't know if there's anything sort of mental block around his fitness where he feels, but yeah, I get it. Tyrese involved again on the right and on the left. I mean, it's all gone quiet on Philogene and Bidace. I mean, we don't get much out of this club, do we? Regards to news or updates on anything. I only got an injury in training on Friday, but I haven't really heard much about the severity of that and what that looks like in like a time frame wise from coming back. If he is available, I'd stick him on there because I'd like to see the odd chance that he might be able to come back next season. I think with a pre-season under his belt, he'd be a good option for us if we can do that deal. If not, then right, Phillips by all means needs to get on the pitch and get on the left side.
Yeah. Okay. No, that's fair enough, mate. And like I said, there's a number of different ways to go with this team. And I probably couldn't argue with a lot of what you've just said anyway, to be fair, mate. So I'm going to be a cop out and go for what you've said there. Andy's, by the way, his message is on his way back on the coach. He says, honestly, I've seen more emotion at a funeral than on this coach. He says, that's how everyone feels. No one spoke since we got on. It's silent all the way. So I think that kind of
funerals can be quite emotional places to be. Yeah,
they can. I think it just shows just how just fed up people are, mate. I think that's what the comment is, really, isn't it? It's just fed up. And again, when you put all the time, money, and effort into going all that way to be served up with that again, I get it. I do get it. Okay, yeah, and just kind of moving and speaking of audio, so Graham McGarry, Mr. Reliable Graham, has been in touch and given his opinion on this weekend. So let's hopefully you see if he's a bit more upbeat than we are this week.
Hi there, you Potters podcast people. Hello there, it's Graham McGarry back again after the international break. I hope you enjoyed your little breather from your football. This is Graham McGarry with that Potter's prediction. Let's hope we get it right this weekend. Stoke City 2, Hull City 0. Stoke 1, West Brom 0. Stoke are ready to win at home. 2-0 for the Potters.
Hello there, once again, you Potters predictors. Well, things aren't going very well, are they, at the moment? It looks as though it's going to be a mid-table finish for Michael O'Neill's side. Of course, in the first part of the season, everybody thought it was either going to be an automatic promotion place or definitely a playoff place. But there's still a lot to play for. There's still players trying to win contracts, players trying to impress Michael O'Neill when given an opportunity. And of course, they're up against one of their former managers in Gary Rowett this particular weekend. So can Stoke City finally get that home win at the Bet365 and give the fans something to cheer about on their way home and something to enjoy over the weekend? It's going to be a tight game. They're always a tough side, Millwall. They don't give a lot away. I can't go for a Stoke win, though. I'm going to go Stoke 1, Millwall 1.
Yeah, cheers, Graham. Thank you very much. I can see you've copied me yet again. You've gone for another 1-1 draw there, mate. So much appreciated, as always. And yeah, I think even Graham started to think that the playoffs aren't quite on the cards for Stoke anymore. Cool. So I must admit, there's not an awful lot more to really talk about this one, mate. I think it's just been another disappointing week. I'm hoping that we can be a bit more upbeat after the Millwall game. We've just heard kind of off air while we were having a bit of a chat, but we just heard the O'Neill interview, which sounded very, very depressed and fed up. Knows that his job's on the line quite clearly from that. So who knows, maybe by Millwall we might be talking about a managerless Stoke, but I've got a feeling we might not be. But anyway, international break next week. We always like to bring you a special wherever we can. So Dan, do you want to just tell everyone very briefly, mate, what they can expect as the special during this week?
Yeah, well, it's something we've sort of been looking to do for a while, isn't it? But we've wanted to get the right time for it. So this should hopefully, it'll be probably coming in two parts. The first part, we'll be looking at the Stoke City women's team and sort of looking at their history, you know, how it came about, that speaking to a few of the players and that there, and, you know, and how they, you know, just how they got involved with it, how it all runs, you know, and everything like that. And we, you know, what they're looking for the future as well, really, you know, and how they're looking to progress, what their aim is. And then obviously as well, the second part is going to be looking at sort of women in football. So it's going to be looking, we're going to be talking to various Stoke fans, who are obviously Stoke women fans who attend games. And we're going to be sort of, we've got people on there like Rory, who's been a regular contributor to our pod. So she's giving us her experiences as a fan of when she's attending games and everything that goes, you know, how she feels, whether she comes across any sort of discrimination, stuff like that, acceptance. And then also there's other Stoke fans on there as well we've got. And then obviously we've got Angela Smith, who's going to be involved as well. So she's going to be talking about, obviously, her sort of route into the Stoke media side of it as well. Obviously, her sporting history as well. And how she's, you know, any barriers that she had to come across for that. And yeah, we're just sort of looking to get a perspective and sort of grow people's knowledge on, you know, how women feel around sport, because I think sometimes people can make comments maybe and don't really understand how that can be portrayed.
Yeah.
And I think there's a lot of people as well that maybe that don't like there's people make comments and they say things and maybe the whether they think they're going to get a laugh off the mates or whatever, but actually can really affect other people. And that goes, that's not just a sexism thing either, that goes for a lot of variety, you know, whoever you're talking to, whatever you're saying to them about. But yeah. In this case, yeah, we're looking at, you know, do women feel welcome? Is it a welcoming place, the Bet365 Stadium, for example?
Well, yeah, I think that's one of the things, you know, it's, we've always said about this podcast, this is just gives anyone a voice. This is us giving our opinions. We like to give everyone a chance to voice their opinions. We've always said that. And, you know, it's not going to be a preachy podcast where it's all about women's rights. And this isn't a political podcast. This is, as you said, it's a Stoke City related podcast. We've got a very loose agenda, but we're not going to be... We're going to let everyone have their say and have their piece. And, you know, Luke, if you don't want to listen to it, totally cool. No problem. It's not for you. It might not be for everyone. But at the end of the day, we want to give everyone a voice. And, you know, hopefully you'll enjoy it. That's the whole point. And, you know, if there's ever any topics that anyone wants to discuss on this podcast and have a special or whatever it is, if you're writing a book, like we've had, you know, with Simon Lowe on, we've had a couple of people who write books as well, so we've had a number of different people in. Yeah, exactly. So if there's ever anyone listening who has that type of a situation, get in touch with us on Twitter or even, you know, the Facebook group or anything like that, and, you know, we'll have a chat. So the door is always open. So but yeah, so thank you again for everyone who's listened this week. We always appreciate it. So we'll obviously catch up with you after the international break when we're obviously reviewing the upcoming matches. But I hope you enjoyed the special. We appreciate everyone who's been tuning in. And we'll, Dan, I'll speak to you no doubt in the week, mate. But thank you to everyone again.
Yeah, he's dodged the quiz, by the way, for anybody wondering.
I thought if I keep talking, then you're not going to bring it in. So... Yeah, thank you, mate. We'll save that one for next week, eh?
See you next week.
Bye, mate.